everyone. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Rachel, and you're listening to
Ambitious, Broke, and Saucy.
Filmmaking on a Budget.
The Candy Thomas interview. Woo-hoo. This is the second episode in our series of interviews with the cast of No Lost Cause. And as is typical, we had some technical difficulties with the first one. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will be posted by the time this interview airs. It just wouldn't be a project of ours if we didn't have audio issues. Mm-hmm. It's almost stopped being something that bothers us.
No, it still bothers us. We just cry less.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, time to press on. Since Mother's Day is quickly approaching, we decided to interview Candy Thomas, who plays Beth Ann's mother in No Lost Cause. And Candy is an actress I had admired from afar for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I'd seen her in a few community theater shows, and she's always just blown me away with how talented she was. Not to mention, drop-dead gorgeous.
Meow.
Ow. In 2008, I was given an opportunity to direct a show here locally called Cactus Flower, and I cast her as the lead female character. Everything that I had thought about her was true and more.
Oh, yeah.
She was professional, dedicated, thoughtful, and just soaked in talent. I was blown away by her performance, and even more so, I was just thrilled that we were able to transcend the professional relationship and become good friends. On a side note, this is also the show that cemented my friendship with Rachel, as I cast her in the supporting female lead in the show.
Actually, Cactus Flower is where I became friends with a large part of the cast and crew for No Lost Cause, because we had Karen Martin, who plays the doctor, we had right. Ashley, Nils, Candy, and Brian. And I just think that show was so much fun to perform, and we had a lot of memories doing it. And I admire Candy greatly because she was always so professional and courteous. She had her lines down pat, and she was natural on stage and was so much fun to be around. And I'm really happy that I get to call her friend.
Wow, you guys. Thank you so much.
Well, before we start the interview process, let's take a really quick break and listen to the audio from one of Candy's scenes as Jenna in No Lost Cause.
How long am I going to be stuck here, Mom?
I don't know. Until we can find something better.
Anything would be better.
Beth Ann, think about it. Here, everything's on one floor. You won't have to worry about stairs or anything.
Just an overbearing father, right?
Oh, Beth Ann, please, give him a chance. He's not how you remember him.
Really? So he's not the stereotypical Bible-thumping Christian who's going to condemn me to hell every time I don't go to Sunday school with him? Stereotypes exist for a reason, Mom. Don't forget why you left him.
You know about it. You were too young to remember.
Welcome, Candy. Thank you for joining us tonight. Okay, so what in particular do you remember about the experience filming No Lost Cause?
Wow. It's funny how much time has already passed, but I still remember it really well. I remember being so impressed by the professionalism. You know, it was one of my first experiences with an independent film and made put together by my friends, who I had a lot of respect for, and I knew that they were professionals, but at the same time, to see the way they put together, you know, the equipment, and they had this knowledge about how to make a film, and scenes, and shots, and just all this technical background knowledge that I never anticipated. It was very impressive.
We made half of that up. Yeah. We don't know what we're talking about.
We were totally bluffing when you were there. We're like, we have to be professional for Candy.
Candy's here.
Take it to the next level.
No. We faked it very well.
We did, yes.
But that was one of my first impressions. The second thing was just how much initiative you guys have and how much gumption, because mm-hmm. just whatever you needed, you found a way to make it happen, whether it was the equipment or whether mm-hmm. it was the audio, you know,
disasters. Yeah.
Know-how or finding settings, you know, sets for us to go to. Mm-hmm. It just somehow happened. You made it happen.
We've talked a little bit, and because you weren't there that often, I don't know if you'll have any memories of this, but we asked Caitlin, do you remember anything that we did that sort of, we're talking about making films on a budget, so is there anything that you remember us doing that was sort of thinking outside the box?
To me, everything was thinking outside the box, yeah. Because I have so little knowledge, but the dedication of the people who worked with you, mm-hmm. I mean, just how much time everyone spent there. So, you know, you had people who were holding the boom mic mm-hmm. and just the way you set that up,
So it's sort of like how our cast doubled as our crew at the same time. So if you're trying to really budget things out, have everybody there all the time, and they'll be your cast and they'll be your crew type of thing.
That was a huge time saver.
And money saver.
Well, everyone was volunteering, so obviously there was no money involved.
Right.
But for people who do have a budget, that would be a great thing to do. And it also creates this sense of family, mm-hmm. because everyone has a double job, and everyone realizes that everybody is working just as hard as the other person. There mm-hmm. was even days where Caitlin sort of, I think, got upset because she was only the lead. So there was one day where there was a scene that it wasn't her scene, so she wanted to be the person that did the clapboard, because she said, I want two jobs.
Yeah, you know, she's always...
I want to do that too. I want to help you guys and have more than one job.
Right, she was always in front of the camera, so it was very difficult for her to do anything other than be in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she would slate, can I slate?
Yeah.
And you just hand her the clapperboard. Oh, thank you. You know, just give her a sense of purpose to do something else too.
Right.
Well, that's what stands out to me, I think, is just the way that you organized everything so well. And as you said, made kind of double duty of everyone.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you think we're organized. That's nice of you.
Here's something that ties directly into Mother's Day. I remember during filming, the character of Jenna was sort of hotly debated at the time of, is she or is she not a good mother to Beth Ann? I'm going to ask this of Rachel and Candy. I don't know who wants to go first, but...
I'm sure Candy does.
Well...
I do have a strong opinion about this.
All right, good. What are your opinions? Do you think that she did the right thing by taking Beth Ann to live with Billy, or did she just... quote unquote, dump her off on her ex so she wouldn't have to deal with Beth Ann's disability?
It's interesting because Ashley and Rachel were kind enough to send me a few questions that I could think about prior to this talk. And actually, in sitting there and kind of mulling it over, it occurred to me. I had an insight that hadn't even occurred to me during the filming, and it kind of came to me now. And I think the reason why she comes across as less of a great mom is because of the way she's portrayed in the film. We get to see her only a few rare times, and the context is that we see a daughter who's a very sympathetic character who we know needs nurturing, needs loving. She's going through something very difficult, and we only see this mom in context of, as you said, dumping her off at this house, and when she is shown, she's not very nurturing and loving. She's more matter-of-fact. She's more abrupt.
Oh, okay, and I get what you're saying. So you don't get to see the backstory of Jenna. You don't get to see her life outside of just these few snippets that are in the film.
Absolutely. And actually, as a mother myself, I almost took umbrage at this woman being called a bad mother, because in all honesty, she raised Beth Ann, for, what is Beth Ann in the movie, 18?
No, she's like 19 or 20.
Okay. Oh, okay, she's old.
I mean, this was a single mother who we understand to have raised this child, and everything that is portrayed in the film comes across as giving you the idea that she did a good job. She was a good mother.
Right.
And this father stepped into the picture when this child, who's now 19, has to go to this house because it's a ranch home that she can move around in.
Right.
So why is this mother who took care of this child and raised her for 19 years the bad one? That, you know, that's what bothered me.
Rachel?
Honestly, I would have to say that I agree. When I was writing the story, there wasn't a fiber in my being that intended to make Jenna out to be this horrible mother. Mm-hmm. But it's just like you were saying, you only get to see a certain part of it.
Right.
You don't get to see the 19 years prior or anything like that. And it is just a story, so there are no 19 years prior. But you can see that she did her job. She took care of her child.
Right.
She didn't abandon her child. Mm-hmm. And she was a good mother. She really
was. And also, I can't remember if this is in the director's cut or in the shorter version, but there's the scene in the library where Billy explains to Evelyn sort of his relationship with Jenna. And he does a good job of saying that she is a good mother, and they just didn't get along for whatever reason, and he moved close by, but that he came to all of her functions, and he was there, but only in the background, because he didn't feel like Beth Ann wanted him. But he was always kind of hovering on the outskirts, ready whenever. And then...
whenever the opportunity presented itself.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, like, Jenna is a bad person because this tragedy happened to her daughter and this is the only option that she had.
Right.
And so then she just kind of disappears for a long time. She's not a bad mother from that. She just makes a decision and then she sticks to her guns.
Right.
And having said what I said before, I really feel like I should clarify. I really like that we get to see that everything's not black and white. There mm-hmm. is gray here. Directorially, I think you all had to make a decision. Mm-hmm. You needed to get across the message, and that message was more clearly conveyed. You know, the change in Billy and the impact that his becoming a Christian made on him, and then how that impacts Beth Ann. I think that that was definitely more clearly conveyed by taking Jenna more into a backseat and letting her be right. that less nurturing character, so that it highlighted those aspects in him.
Well, here's another thought that is completely unrelated to the script, because, and I just had this thought, because it was a first film made by a group of friends, Candy, we knew your schedule was more restrictive than Brian's schedule. Mm-hmm. I think had Rachel known you were going to be available for more days, Jenna would have had a much larger part in mm-hmm. the film.
Right.
We knew you were only right. available for a couple days, so then, okay, well, Jenna's going to be a small part, because she knew she wanted you to portray Jenna.
Yeah, mm-hmm. from the very beginning.
Yeah.
That's who I wanted. And
right, so we kind of worked around you, and as a result, the story not suffered, but changed.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think I saw that even uh-huh. Even as it went through the filming, I believe you made some
yeah.
changes in the script.
Right.
Writing daily almost,
yes.
you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
trying to change it up a
right.
little bit. And another thing that we had a big issue with that is a gray area, like you were talking about, is were they ever married? Were,
right.
were Jenna and
right.
Billy ever married to each other? And I made it purposely clear. I guess it's not really clear. Like I said, it's gray. But I wanted it to be one of those things where you did not know.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know if they were ever married or not. There's mm-hmm. nothing ever said divorce,
no,
nothing.
Right, right.
So that we debated that one
yeah,
for
we did.
Days.
Were they married?
Are they
not
married,
married
or they're not? I'm like, you know what? No, you don't know.
Yeah.
Yes or no, you don't know. It doesn't matter. That's
right.
not the point of the story.
Right.
Exactly.
Because
right.
that's real life. You know, things happen in marriage, out of marriage. That's real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, guys, let's take a quick break before we move on with some more questions.
No Lost Cause is a story of redemption, forgiveness, and unconditional love. Everyone has asked the age-old question, why did God allow this to happen? The truth is, 99% of the time, we don't deserve the bad that happens to us, but the bad happens nonetheless. God uses these moments to piece us back together stronger than before. Even when we think we aren't worth saving, God knows that there is no such thing as a lost cause.
If you're enjoying these interviews,
and we know you are,
of course they are, you can purchase the film that we're talking about by going to www.nolostcausedvd.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, walmart.com, and in person at Lifeway Christian Bookstore and Family Christian Bookstore.
We also have a Facebook page at www.facebook.com/nolostcausemovie.
Stop by and like us.
Ladies,
yes.
what in your opinions are some of the worst mother figures besides Jenna in theater or movies?
Well, I know that you had mentioned, of course, Mommy Dearest.
Of course.
When we
I mean,
about
you
this
can't.
Before.
Yeah.
That's, but I feel like that's sort of cheating because everybody's going to think
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, I asked people today, I was like, who's the worst mother? Mommy Dearest. You know,
yeah.
everybody
yeah.
says that.
Stereotypical.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, one I thought about was Mama Rose in Gypsy.
Mm.
Because she's so controlling and she wants to pretty much live her life through her daughter. She's just a manipulative, controlling mother, which goes along with my TV choice, which was Lucille Bluth from Arrested Development. She is a terrible, terrible mother,
yeah.
but we can laugh at her. But if she was my mom, oh, I don't know what I would do.
I would leave.
Yeah.
I would leave. I would be like
I
Michael
really
Bluth and leave.
Yeah, I really sympathize with Michael.
Have you ever seen Arrested Development?
Just a few episodes.
Okay, this is something that's going to happen like every podcast we do. We're going to ask them if they
yeah,
see.
We talk about it, yeah.
yeah.
It's like my theory that you can use a quote from Jurassic Park every day.
In reference
any,
to anything.
In any situation.
Yeah.
I went to the Cincinnati Zoo this weekend, and at one point I was looking at all the exhibits, and there were some where there were no animals, and I said, at some point you do plan to have dinosaurs on your ride, right? I was like, yes, got to use
absolutely.
The quote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would have to say every Disney cartoon movie ever made.
Right.
For example, because...
Well, not that they're
it.
Bad mothers. They're
no,
absent.
They're absent.
Or
there
dead.
Are no mothers, or they're horrible mothers. You know,
mm-hmm.
Cinderella, the stepmom, awful.
Right.
There's
Snow White.
Snow White, yeah.
But notice back in the day, I guess, when those Disney movies were made, the mother figure was so sacred that it was only the stepmothers who could be bad.
That's right.
Right.
I don't know when the transition happened, because now when you got into the late 80s, early 90s with Beauty and the Beast, no mom.
Right.
Little Mermaid, no mom.
Right.
Mulan, I think Mulan had a mother.
Yes, she did.
She did. She
was
had a
she
mom.
Was she a good mother?
She was, although she was trying to force her daughter into marriage.
That's true.
It was still
That's
the dad
true.
Who was well, the most sympathetic.
Right, yeah. But look at, okay, Pride and Prejudice. The mother,
that's right.
The
yeah,
mother,
that's a good point.
That was her job, but you have to think of, you may think, oh, she's a bad mom because she just wants her kids to get married.
But that's part but of the time.
That was part of the time period they lived in. That mm-hmm. was what she considered the best thing that she could do for her daughters is to secure a home, a family, a future family,
yeah.
and a husband for them. Because in their case, they were not heirs to the father's fortune. The nephew was.
Right.
Whatever the son was. So, you know, yes, she was a busybody, and yes, she was...
Annoying. Oh, she was so annoying.
But I feel like she loved her children.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the best way
yeah.
she could.
Pocahontas, no mother.
Yeah.
Lion King, yes, there is a mother. But
really?
She,
yeah, I don't
role.
Remember the
Very
role.
Small
Yeah,
role.
Very, very oh. tiny. Mm-hmm. She stands up to Scar, there is no food, Scar. And then he just like smacks her across the rock.
Look, it's interesting what you said about Pride and Prejudice, because other than Mommy Dearest, I had a hard time thinking of movie or theatrical mothers who mm-hmm. were just straight bad moms.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to, again, that Pride and Prejudice example, sometimes I think it's about the perspective. Because if you look at The Diary of Anne Frank, Mrs. Frank is portrayed as being a bad mom, but only because she's in so much conflict with her daughter, and it's her daughter who's telling the story.
Right, it's
if you really look at it from an outside perspective, this is a woman in the most awful, most, you know, mm-hmm. horrendous conditions who's trying to keep her family together, and she was really, I think, a strong mother.
Yeah.
But that's not the way she's portrayed.
Right. It's the same thing in our film, where it's Billy's side of the story. So mm-hmm. Billy is the one that we get to hear the point of view.
We're going to have to make a part two, aren't we? Jenna's story.
Jenna's story.
Jenna is no lost cause.
Yeah.
And the other mom, and this is interesting because I think a lot of times moms don't rate getting to be the gray character. They're really very stereotypical black and white. Mm-hmm. But in this case, the movie that came to my mind was Mask. That is a mother who is not a good role model for her child, but yet she loves him dearly, and she
is this
will
the
sacrifice
film with
for him.
Cher?
Cher. Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't
have to say
it,
I've never seen this.
But give us a little synopsis of, because her son is disfigured, or?
He is. I don't know the name of the disease, but he has.
Is it like elephantitis?
Yes, thank you. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
And, you know, we have scenes where she abuses drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, she has a hard time staying with one man. She moves through many, many different men who live with her in the home. Mm-hmm. It's just a very rough lifestyle, mm-hmm. which does affect her son. But at the same time, she loves him dearly and is mm-hmm. so devoted to him. And she makes sure that, you know, in as much as she can, she gives him a very happy life. And so she's a little bit more of a gray character.
Wasn't mm-hmm. that similar to her character in Mermaids? Wasn't she sort of this freewheeling, where mm-hmm. Winona Ryder was the real straight-laced daughter? Again, I haven't seen it in years, but I remember her being a mom that was real free-spirited.
I think you're right.
But she still cared about her daughters.
Right.
Yeah. That's part of that superpower.
So
you weren't
weird.
Here last week, but we talked about superpowers, and I haven't seen the movie The Mask yet. I knew who was in it. I knew what the son had suffered
so
from.
Awful.
And I haven't seen Mermaids in years and years, but I still remember it. Things
comes
about
right
it.
Right back to you.
It does. But again, I don't know directions or algebra or anything.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Is the weirdest thing. She yeah. just absorbs trivia. But
I do.
Anything else is
gone.
Huh?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for that, Rachel.
Yeah,
you're very welcome.
Well, is that it for our bad mothers?
Well, sure. Yes. I had a thought about why moms don't play a very large role. I don't know if that was something that you wanted to discuss, but
yeah,
you
sure.
had mentioned that as mm-hmm. an idea, and it was another insight that came to me is, sadly, I have come to the conclusion that, for the most part, I don't think mothers rate in our society. I think that most of the time, mm-hmm. you know, when we see a movie or we read a book, our protagonist is someone who's interesting, who has some kind of a conflict that they have to deal with and they have to try to overcome. And most of the time, we don't find mothers interesting enough to even view them as people.
Right.
They're kind of relegated to like the supporting character whose mm-hmm. only role is to take care of someone or just to be this nurturing figure in the background.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
preaching.
We don't make them.
Right.
Right. And I even thought about one of my examples of a great mother. Is Maria from The Sound of Music.
Yeah.
And think about after she marries the
captain
how much she falls out of the story. She suddenly becomes less interesting.
That's right.
She just falls into that little wifely role, and
right.
she is no
right.
longer nearly.
My blood is boiling right now. My blood is boiling. I can't. Because I was sitting there thinking of the same exact thing, and I'm probably going to sound like a feminazi here in a second. But,
well,
you know.
Go ahead.
It doesn't matter. But I think it reflects society, too, is that the father figure in reality it plays such a pivotal role, and it's so easy to abandon. Okay.
Well, so, here's a thought though. Do you think, as far as in the, let's talk about the Christian film, the faith-based film category, do you think that they only talk about father, child, or father, daughter, father, son, because it's easier to compare a father's love to God's love?
No, I don't think that's why they do it at all. I think it's because men are writing stories about men. I think that's what it is, that they don't have any insight into a woman's life or a woman's perspective, honestly.
So they're writing what they know.
Yeah, they're writing what they know. And what was the figure that only 10% of people in film are women? Mm-hmm. Okay, 90% of the roles that are in film are filled by men.
Right.
And what do women usually do? Hair and makeup.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
right. How long did it take us to have a best director that was a female?
Exactly. And you can even go so far and say that for an African-American, because an African-American has never won best director before for the Academy Awards. But I think, a woman automatically has this bond, this nurturing bond with their child, because they've been there from point A to point B.
Okay,
you know?
So is it a lack of conflict? Because the mother
that's exactly
is
what
nurturing.
It is. That's exactly what it is. So if they create this conflict with the mother and have a distant mother and not a good mother, it just creates more conflict for the protagonist. I was sitting there thinking about this today and I was like, oh, it's conflict. That's what it's about.
So is it actually showing respect to mothers that they're
not? No, I don't think so at all.
Well, that's my question.
Yeah.
Is it because...
And we fell into the trap too.
Right.
Mind
it's
you.
The same thing that happened in The Lost Cause.
Yeah.
The story was about a father and daughter and not the mother. But is it because, here's my question, is it because the writer, and I guess this would be you, does the writer respect the mother-daughter relationship and wanted to explore the father-daughter or thought that the conflict would be more interesting coming from the opposite sexes? But could you think of conflict that could happen between the mother-daughter?
Oh, absolutely. There can always be conflict that happens between the mother and daughter. But I really wasn't going at it from that perspective. I honestly couldn't tell you why it is that I wrote it the way that I did. It just came out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that it came out that way.
Right, right.
Because it signifies the relationship that I have with my own father.
Right.
But... I feel guilty now because I made my mother, if that's signifying the relationship that I have with my father, what do I say about my mother,
Well, I don't think it was portraying your mother at all.
No, not at all.
About
I love my mother. Yeah,
right.
it's just, I don't understand, because like I said, we fell into the trap too. Why writers have such a hard time doing the mother-daughter stories or the mother-son stories even.
Well, look at The Measure of a Man. I know that was written by a woman, and yet it was also
about
a
man.
Father. And daughter, or the father being the lead role.
Is it because the father is supposed to be the leader of the household? Is
possibly.
That...
That's what I'm saying, comparing it to God's relationship with man and then the father's relationship. Is it an easier comparison between the two?
Right.
Could that be possibly why?
I think that's a thought-provoking idea, and I, in my back of my mind, I kind of hope that's it, but honestly, I think it's almost habit.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's almost just the way things are. We find men more interesting. We're more likely to give them the meatier roles. Sometimes we have this image in our minds that if there is a conflict between a mom and a daughter, it's just this nagging inconsequential thing that is nothing that would, rate a movie being written about it.
Right.
And therefore, it's just set aside. We don't even think about that.
Right. Oh, thought-provoking.
Right, so I guess that's our call to writers, is put more things out there that are mother-centered.
Instead of father, because there's plenty of movies for Father's Day.
Well, let me go ahead and put this out there. Why does a woman, once she becomes a mother, only function in that role in her life? Why can she not have a conflict in a movie that has nothing to do with her children?
Right.
Because once she becomes a mother, all of a sudden, seem to think that she is nothing but a mother, whereas a man... A father is just one of the many hats that he wears.
Yes.
We give him roles that take him outside of that one aspect.
I could just spew out so many Christian films right now.
Go for it.
Courageous, first of all.
Courageous was just about the fathers.
It was just about the fathers, and I understand that to a certain
extent. And here's our caveat. We are not insulting any of these films.
No,
these
absolutely
are our opinions.
Not.
They made great movies, and they did stuff that we couldn't. These are just opinions of... Whatever. So
Agreed.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But the mothers, what do the mothers do? They stay in the kitchen. You know, the first time I think I saw a woman in that movie, she was in the kitchen.
Yeah.
What was she doing? She was making food for her kids or whatever. That just irritating me because there's more to a woman than just, go in the kitchen and make me a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to it than that.
The film that makes me...
Go for it. Oh, I know. Go do it.
And again, this was a groundbreaking film in the technical aspect of Christian cinema. But the mother in October Baby drove me insane. It's about a young woman. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's about a young woman who finds out that she is adopted. Mm. And not only was she adopted, but she was also the victim of a botched abortion. So she finds out all this information in the first 10 minutes of our film. And her parents can't understand why she kind of loses her mind a little bit. It's a lot to take in. But the story is mostly about her father and her dealing with this. Mm-hmm. And it's not anything to do with the mother. The mother has a sit-down talk with her, which is okay, but it didn't hit deeply enough.
There was no substance.
There was no substance to the talk. She was just sort of in the background. The dad would come in and say the problems he was having with the daughter, and she would just sort of be like, oh, I know, honey, I know you'll get it worked out, and I know it'll be okay. And then when the mom finally does have a sit down, I was like, okay, now mom and daughter, right. She's going to talk about this. And she talked about how she had been pregnant and she had lost her child. And then this girl came up for adoption and they just knew that it was meant to be. And that was basically the talk. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well,
that's okay. Not reassuring.
No, it wasn't reassuring at all. And something they had at the end of the film was one of the characters who plays her birth mother. She had actually, the woman playing the birth mother who had tried to get the abortion had actually had an abortion in real life. And this was how she was able to connect with the character of the birth mother. And she did a fantastic job. Just very emotional. And I thought to myself, if that had been the mother's story in October Baby, if the mother had said...
The adopted mother.
If the adopted mother had gone into the bedroom and said to her, I got pregnant. I had an abortion early on. I could no longer have children. And then I felt like when you came along, this was my chance at redemption. Mm-hmm. And that's why I took you in. Wouldn't that have been so much stronger and made you have so much more sympathy?
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah, it made you have so much more sympathy for her. And I just feel like they sort of missed the boat on that. And at the end of the film, when everything is wrapped up and everything is okay, she's going off to our main character, Hannah, is going off to college, and her parents take her to the college, and they're standing there and they're doing the thing they do where they have their arms around each other.
Spoiler alert, by the way.
This whole thing has been spoilers. Sorry, guys. She is going off with the love of her life and whatnot, and she turns around and she looks at her parents, and she runs up to her father and gives him a hug and says, thank you for wanting me, and never says anything to her mother.
Wow.
Nothing. She just turns around and walks away, and the mom's just like, all right,
yeah.
I'm good. You know, I don't need a hug,
I guess.
See
you in a couple of months
but
for Christmas.
But that drove me insane. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand that.
It's almost, I think what we're saying is that we're just seeing, kind of making a blanket statement that in all these examples, it feels like the mothers are not dynamic characters. They're flat. Mm-hmm. They're just cardboard, superficial.
Yeah. They're just
characters.
There.
No development.
Yeah.
They're just there to be supportive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's it. To help push the story along. Just a little bit.
Right. Right.
But not enough to do anything.
Right. Not even major instigators.
No.
Just,
usually the father is the major instigator in most of these situations.
Mm-hmm.
No, the woman's just supposed to sit there. Seen
right.
and not heard.
Well, ladies, now you know. You have to write a new script. And
I feel so guilty.
Character for a female.
I fed into this.
We're perpetrators. I know. But it's like we said, it's an easy trap to fall into.
Yeah, it is. It,
and I don't know why that is. Being females, you would think we would be more, and the movies we have made have been female-centric. The second film that we made, I feel like the mother was a good mother, but she was also...
But you never saw her.
No, she was deceased.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of our film, that's part of what drives the character in the second film, is that her mom has passed away and she's had all this bad stuff happen to her. And she did have a good relationship with her mother.
But it created a conflict, once again, that the mother was gone.
Yeah.
And then the father, he was, I'm not going to give anything away.
No, but it is another film about a girl searching for a father figure because she never had one.
Right.
So she had a great mother. Now she's searching for her father.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So similar. Did you copy my screenplay?
No. No. Not
just
at all.
Just kidding.
No.
Okay, so we talked about that. What do you think, since we already broached the subject of how women are horrible in mother roles in films, mm-hmm. stuff like that, who do you think are some of the best mother figures in theaters or movies?
Well, I'm getting ready to do a show called Steel Magnolias, and we discussed that Malin is probably one of the best mother figures.
Yeah, and it took us 2 days to figure that one out.
It did, because I posed this question 2 days ago, and yeah. I asked 4 or 5 different people. Off the top of your head, can you name me a great mother figure in theater or in movies? And everyone's like, I don't know.
It's hard,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, I asked people at work today. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, guys, think of something.
I came up with Malin.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Maria from The Sound of Music, right, which yes. I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And the one that came to me, I feel really proud of this one. I think that the mother, is it Marmee in Little Women, is an amazing mother.
Oh, okay.
She's wise. She self-reflective because she changed her own behavior when she mm-hmm. had that, you know, she was very hot-tempered and she mm-hmm. used to say things that were hurtful and she
mellowed out
that and taught herself how to hold her tongue mm-hmm. and, you know, and to be loving and nurturing. Mm-hmm. And she was strong because her husband was gone through the war and she raised those kids. And I felt like, you know, this was a good mom.
I feel so guilty yeah. right now. I have never read Little Women.
Oh.
Or seen the play. Either one.
No. No movie.
Or the movie. There's been like 17...
I know.
Katharine Hepburn was in the first one with Elizabeth Taylor.
She's getting horribly irate right now. And she's looking at me with these really wide cow eyes like, what? And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Wow. So we're going to have to rectify that.
Please tell me you've seen The Sound of Music.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I have seen The Sound of Music.
One that my mom had said, which I have not seen this film, but she said a good mother figure is I Remember Mama with Irene Dunne. Which I haven't seen either, but she said it's similar to Marmee. Mm-hmm. She raised the children while the dad was out.
What was the one that I told you today? Sorry.
A Stepmom.
No, not Stepmom. It was the other one. It was with Bette Midler and Helen Hunt. Then She Found Me. Yeah. That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Continue with your story.
Oh, that was it. That's the end of my story.
Okay. Well, I was just saying that one, Helen Hunt was adopted and then her adoptive mother died, and then Bette Midler comes along. She's a talk show host and says, hey, I'm your birth mother. And she tries to establish a relationship with her.
She tells her dad is Steve McQueen.
Yes. It is so cute. I love that movie. I love Colin Firth in it and everything.
Oh, that's right. He's
yes.
And Matthew Broderick, right?
Yeah, Matthew Broderick. Yeah, he doesn't age.
No,
He has looked the exact same for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed.
Slightly older than Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Did you know that the parents in Ferris Bueller got married?
Like in real life?
In real life! Isn't that adorable?
Yes. Okay, guys, it's time for our featured musician segment. This week is Maggie Lander. She's a local singer, songwriter, and instrumentalist. She's an alumni of the Woodsongs Old Time Radio Hour house band and currently plays with the Patrick McNeese Band in and around Lexington. Her debut EP, Miss Me Moon, was released in late 2011, and she is currently in pre-production of her latest album. So sit back, relax, and listen to Miss Me Moon.
Spinning my wheels. Now I know.
Candy, do you mind telling us a little bit about some of your favorite roles that you've had in theater?
Not at all.
Theater, I'm sorry. Theater. That was great.
Ooh. Actually, and I'm not just saying this because you two are sitting here.
Oh, yeah.
I do think my all-time favorite role is the one where Ashley directed and Rachel was the lead.
No.
My first time working.
Candy was definitely the lead.
Yeah. But it was Cactus Flower. I loved that production. It was so much fun.
It really was.
That really was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was. It was great. And the audience reaction was just wonderful. Another one that I really loved was Something to Hide. I had the opportunity to play Karen Holt, and it was very suspenseful.
It was. Hannah and I went to see that. It was good. Oh, it was very good.
That was fun.
I missed it.
And of course, there's the classic, and then there were none. I have a thing for suspense,
mm-hmm.
I think.
You like the mystery
type
things?
I really like that. Mm-hmm. Night Watch was another one, similar vein.
Mm-hmm.
And to mix it up a little bit, it was fun to play a pigeon sister in The Odd Couple.
Yes, you were delightful as that. It's so fun to see you do comedy, and your range is just, I could just stumble all over my words. And
she is, actually.
Which I am.
Aww. Look at her go.
You guys are so nice.
I'm serious. It's you're fantastic, so.
Yeah. I would have to say Cactus Flower was the most fun I've had on stage before. Mm-hmm. It was so great. Mm-hmm. And yes, you were the lead. I was not the lead. You had more lines than me.
Definitely.
I counted my lines.
She does that.
I count how many lines I had. I did not do it for Radio Gals, though.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't.
You were too busy being stressed out about the music.
Oh, the music. Oh, I shudder. But yeah, I counted everybody's lines, actually.
You did not.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And I was like, okay, so Cook Farmer has the most lines. Candy has the second most. And then there's me.
Do you know how many they have?
I've never done that.
I don't think I have either.
I had 327, I think.
You remember?
I remember the whole first scene of Cactus Flower, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember.
Wow.
I'm not going to do it.
Do it.
No, because
you.
It's really weird how it starts out. Okay.
That's true. It
yeah,
is.
I don't want to do that.
Do you remember the first line? Just do the first
Julian,
line.
Julian.
That's right.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kiss me, Julian. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's like, who's Julian?
Okay.
Well, Rachel, is that your favorite part then?
Absolutely. Hands down. Loved it. Loved
Tony
every.
Tony Simmons?
Yes. Every bit of that character. Loved it.
I don't know what mine is. I think I enjoyed Radio Gals when I played America.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first musical. I think it was the experience. But I also loved Moon Over Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
I was in Moon Over Buffalo. And just the whole thing, because it was my first real lead. It was my first experience. And just the entire thing was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's my fondest.
So you would do it again if you had the opportunity?
I would. I'm a little nervous about the lines. Because I'm a lot older. I'm 10 years older now, so.
Oh, I would do Cactus Flower again in a heartbeat.
Would you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Would
and
you?
Of course.
Yeah.
But I tend to like to do different things, you know?
No, I do too, but sometimes it's just fun to go back and remember.
Yeah, that's what I did with Big River, because it was a small part.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like,
You had the largest small part, though. You had the largest female part.
That was an instrumental role.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's in my vocal range.
Part.
I liked that. Okay, Candy, do you have any tips or tricks for memorizing lines or getting into character?
Memorizing lines? This is a new development. My old habits were always just to practice them a lot, write them out, and, you know, just study.
That is such dedication to me, to write them out. My hand would cramp. I would not do
it
that.
It does, but it helps. And I actually still do that. And bless her heart, my sister has always been really wonderful at quizzing me on my lines. But a few years ago, another actor showed me how to better make use of my iPhone, and so now I record my lines and leave pauses.
This is not the first time that I've heard of this method, because we were talking about this at Steel Mic, and really.
Oh, it's amazing how effective it is. You can listen to it while you're getting ready, while you're putting on your makeup, while you're in the car, and you record the cues, you pause to give yourself time while you're there to say it out loud, and then you've read into the recording what the line is so that you can hear what it really was. Mm-hmm. So you're just studying constantly.
So you would read into the recording everything besides your line?
Yes.
Beside your lines?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, not the whole script, but just your...
Because this is actually
the way that I learned my lines early on in my career, but I used a tape recorder because we didn't have iPhones 10 years ago. But I would use a tape recorder, and I would read the other person's line, and then I would do two different versions. I would read the other person's lines and mine as well, but then I would do another version when I got a little more advanced, leaving it blank completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to get myself out of it.
Isn't that fantastic? I have never done that before.
Yeah.
You'll have to try it. I'm telling you, it works.
Actually, I don't really have to memorize lines. I it's a gift.
It's a young gift.
Okay. It's a young
Give
gift.
Give it a few years and then pull out your iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I would just like read it at rehearsal
and that would be it.
Yeah.
Even for a really large part like Toni Simmons?
Yeah. She told me later
that she only rehearsed her lines
once.
At practice.
I rehearsed it once outside of practice, and that was at a Waffle House one night. And then I was like, I don't really need to do this.
Now, for me, once I know the lines, I can put the book down. Well, this is 10 years ago. I don't know what it's going to be like now.
Yeah.
But back when I used to do this more frequently, once I learned the lines, I would not have to pick up the book again. Mm-hmm. It would just be in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I just go
great.
With it.
It's still in my head.
Well,
yeah, we did Cactus Flower in 2008. That was 5 years ago.
That's
still
amazing.
There. Yeah.
You did well in school. That helped you with school,
no,
I'm sure.
No, I was so lazy. It did not help. It hindered. I was so lazy in school.
I am a visual learner because I do, when I'm saying my lines, I see them on the page.
Yeah.
I see that
sort
this
of
is
like
at
the
top. Or this is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat.
That's your is it still your trick after all these years? You said you used to use the tape recorder.
Right. What's now what I do now? Is I read them and I take a postcard or
she
something.
She beats herself mercilessly.
Oh gosh, I'm so nervous about this. But I take a postcard and I cover it up and I say that I look like I'm a crazy person because I'll be sitting there saying them to myself because I'm an auditory learner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm mixing the reading with the auditory, and once I've said it, it sort of gets in my head.
Oh.
But I just cover it, and if I miss it, I go back. And I'm learning it a couple pages at a time. Then I'm going back and rereading those pages and adding a couple more pages. So I'm adding to it as I go, rather
slowly
than
slowly building.
Yeah, rather than trying to tackle this all at once, because that's intimidating.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Chunking it—that's a good strategy.
Yes.
Okay, I have a question. Would you rather? This is part of our Would You Rather segment, and every person that comes, we're going to ask them a question. Would you rather? Would you rather win an Oscar or a Tony?
Oh. Oh.
I know what I would say. Do you know what you would say, Ashley, as Candy Stews?
Yes, you answer first.
I would probably say Oscar.
I would too.
Mm-hmm.
I would too. The shift. There's been a shift from theater to film in the past 100 years, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and film has more notoriety to it, you know?
Yeah, but I would say that while I might rather have an Oscar, I feel like the Oscar win would be more political.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like the talent would be the Tony. So maybe
no,
that's why I'm like, Oscar? I have a better chance with Oscar?
Well, okay, you know, who won Best Actor at the Tonys last year?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Who won it
mm-hmm.
for the Oscars?
This year or last year?
The previous.
Right. Everybody knows those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis won. I have no idea who won the Best Tony, you know, mm-hmm. Best Actor Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point. I think I would have to say the Oscar as well because the recognition factor would be
higher.
However, that Tony represents getting up there on that stage and performing it live and being recognized.
Right.
And like the achievement that stands behind it seems a little greater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. But if it comes to selling your soul, I would go for an Oscar.
Well, and also the Oscar is a much bigger pay hike.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Just look at our local girl, Jennifer Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
who's, she's from, 30 miles from here, Middletown. And 2 years ago, she was being paid, I don't even remember how much.
In the thousands.
In the thousands.
Yeah.
Once she got that Best Actress Oscar, she can now command $20 million plus per picture.
Right.
Just
and
a matter
we all know
of 2 years.
Names.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all know her name.
Absolutely.
So, okay, who is your favorite actor or actress?
You're both looking at me. Okay, my favorite actor,
mm-hmm.
of course, is the Robert Downey Jr.
Well, you were saying a lot of nice things about Tom Hardy.
Oh, I love Tom Hardy. He's my number two.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can say so much more niceness
about... If Robert Downey Jr. cannot fulfill the requirements of being Rachel's favorite actor, Tom Hardy will be called upon to step in and fill
in. If Robert Downey Jr. does something...
Yes.
As bad as Fur, the movie Fur, then if he does that again...
I've never even heard of that movie.
There's
either.
A reason you haven't heard of that movie.
Was it early or late?
It was post-rehab.
Really?
It was post-rehab with Nicole Kidman. Oh.
Well, there it
Lord
is.
Lord have mercy.
What is that award, a Razzie? Did he win a Razzie?
Oh, he should have. He should have won all of them.
Nicole Kidman is on the list of most overpaid, underhyped actress. It's like her and Will Ferrell. She is paid X amount of dollars for her films, and her films make
X amount less.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she'd probably, you know, dropped on that list because she hasn't had a bestseller in quite a while.
Moulin Rouge, that's pretty much the extent of my, you know, library full of Nicole
mm-hmm.
Kidman. I have a lot of Robert Downey Jr. movies.
Yes,
post-rehab. Mm-hmm. Post-rehab. There are a few good ones.
Chaplin was fantastic.
Oh, my goodness. I
liked
love
the romantic
movie.
Comedy Only You with Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Pre-rehab.
Yes, it was.
The post-rehab.
Pre-first rehab. Post-last rehab. I mean, if you were to ask me, what is the worst movie you have ever seen? Fur.
Okay. All right.
I hope he hears that.
Well, I would like that to go on record as Napoleon Dynamite is not the worst movie I've ever seen.
It is the second worst movie I've ever seen.
I need time. This is
okay.
A tough one for me.
Favorite actress?
Okay.
Since I was asked that before the break,
mm-hmm.
Kate Winslet and Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
Huh. Those two.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Like the redhead people.
They are talented.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I was going to say Kate Winslet is one of mine.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking modern, if we're talking people who are alive right now.
Okay, well, yeah. But then if you have the golden era, that would have to be like Audrey Hepburn,
right.
Catherine Hepburn.
Catherine Hepburn, Audrey Hepburn. If I see something on Turner Classic Movies that has Audrey or Catherine Hepburn in it, Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, I'm going to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because I know it'll be good. But if we're talking modern, if you hear this person's in the film, will you go see it? My actor, Jason Bateman.
Oh, yes.
I like
absolutely.
Jason.
Yeah. I will go see him in a film. Just knowing
Jeff Goldblum?
Jeff Goldblum, yes.
You say that with such fervor and passion.
Oh, yeah, definitely Jeff Goldblum. I watched his short-lived series, Reigns.
Yeah.
About the detective.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
I never watched it. It's on Hulu.
Okay.
So if you're out there, watch it. It's only about 7 episodes, but it's about a detective who solves crimes by talking to the victims. However, they appear as characters, but he can only...
Alive, right? Like he's talking to alive victims?
No.
Or dead
they
bodies?
They are figments of his imagination.
Okay,
but he can
gotcha.
Only talk to them as much as he's learned about them, if this makes sense. The clues tell him that she was from Texas and she was a cheerleader. So that's...
So she'll appear as a cheerleader.
Yes, in a Texas accent. If he finds out something different, if he thinks that she smokes, she says, why do you think that I smoke? Because I found a cigarette at your house. So it's really interesting...
Okay.
How it develops. Yeah, I like that a lot.
It is an interesting concept.
And nobody watched it, and then it just, like, died off. I can't believe that.
Well, if it was a good show, it probably got canceled.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. usually how it works.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I can answer the question, because it's the ones who would draw me to the box office would probably be more of the mainstream names.
Right.
But if I really sit here and try to answer the question, you know, who impresses me,
yeah.
I'm going to come up with some people like... Edward Norton or Daniel Day-Lewis, but they're
that's
not the
okay.
people who automatically, you know, like I don't.
But Daniel Day-Lewis is in my top five. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. After his performance in Lincoln,
oh,
that
yeah.
was fantastic.
And a lot of people, I have read recently, a lot of people hate that movie. And I'm like, how
really?
Can you hate that movie?
That mm-hmm. movie makes me cry.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. I thought it was so moving. I love the cinematography. I love the lighting in the film. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And then women, again, it's hard.
It's easier to come up with an actor than it is an actress.
It is, because, I mean, you know, you think of people like I like Reese Witherspoon movies, mm-hmm, but you don't mm-hmm. have the depth of mm-hmm. acting there as you mm-hmm. do with a Meryl Streep or, you know, so it's just tough.
It is tough.
Well, I don't know. I think that's okay, though. There's mm-hmm. different niches, how do you say that?
I don't
for
know.
People to fill. Some people
true.
Like
N-I-C-H-E-S, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how do you say it, Candy? You're the English.
I don't know. I would have said niches. That's, okay. Thank you.
Niche.
Yeah. Our sound department is saying niche, and they're giving us an ugly look right now.
So that must
like,
be right.
Duh.
So the Reese Witherspoon, if that gives you happiness, if that brings joy, then she's done her job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and she did a great dramatic turn and walked the line.
Well, that's true. She was great.
She did a dramatic turn the other day.
Yes, she did.
When she got arrested.
She said,
and
leave
threw
my
out the name
alone.
Card.
You
do
know
you
who I am.
Well, you're yes. gonna find out.
Yes, we do, Reese.
Okay, Reese. Just chill pill.
Okay.
Calm yourself.
Okay, it is game time. I'm going to test your knowledge about those former shows that you all talked about. I've come up with 3 quotes from previous shows, and you have to tell me the name of the show.
Oh, the show that we've been in, or the show that we were just getting, like a movie?
Been in.
Ugh.
So it's going to be super
easy.
Yeah. It's going to be super, super easy. Okay, who wants to go first?
Candy.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and in all of these, it should have been your character except for one. I couldn't find the line for your particular character.
Okay.
So, okay, number one. You know... Girl talk.
That would be the production that I was just in.
It's
Murder
my favorite
in Green
line.
Meadows.
I didn't want to do the whole spill coming up to you because I didn't remember it, but it's fantastic. She does this long dialogue of what she's been doing, and then she says at the end, you know, girl talk. And then she does this little giggle. It's fantastic.
Well, Ashley called me right after that show, and she's like, I have to tell you every detail that just happens. Like, okay. Aww. And she, it took like 45 minutes for her to tell me. She reenacted it pretty much. And then I remember that part, you know, girl talk. That was great.
Sure, the soft lights helped, but there was something else. There was a spark, electricity. I could feel it, and it was my electricity.
It has to be cactus flower.
Yes. It is. Yes. I remember that part. I was like, I didn't say that line, but I know who did.
Yep. And if you didn't get it, my second one was going to be, I'd still only trust you with my teeth and gums.
When you storm out, you're like, I'd still only trust you with my teeth and gums.
Okay. My favorite line from that
What
play,
is your favorite line?
Oh, by far, it was when I turned around and said, and by the way, you might have told me that I have children.
Yes. That was awesome.
For anybody that doesn't know anything about the show, I apologize, but you need to go rent it or something.
Yeah,
Goldie Hawn.
A movie with Walter Matthau, Ingrid Bergman, and Goldie Hawn. Goldie Hawn won
the Academy Award
for Best Supporting Actress.
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number four for Candy. And this is two people talking. I'm afraid it's no use. The boat won't come until Monday. No boat will ever come. We're here forever.
And then there were none.
Yes. And I actually took that from the movie, so I was hoping it was the same on the stage. Okay, this one was not your character, but it is said in the film.
Okay.
I read the obituaries every day just for the satisfaction of not seeing my name there.
Social Security? Mm-mm. No, what is that?
No, it was listed as one of your favorite plays.
Oh, my goodness.
You did it at Little Colonel.
Okay.
I believe David Bornholt directed.
Oh, Night Watch.
No.
What? Oh, Last of the Red Hot Lovers?
Yes. Okay. Did David direct that?
He did.
Okay, I thought so. All right. Good job. That last one was hard.
It was a tough one.
It was, because it wasn't your character, but I wanted to give you at least, I looked for all of them. I was like, come on, guys. All right. Rachel's turn.
Oh, boy.
And Rachel,
I have to live up to my hype now. I don't think I can.
Oh, you totally can. These are super easy.
Okay.
Nephews, nonsense. A woman knows when she sees a real mother with her children. Besides, anyone who sees those kids couldn't doubt that they're yours. It's fantastic how much the older boy looks like you.
That was Cactus Flower.
Yes, it was.
No, because I was sitting there, I was like, I had to go through the entire show in my head. I was like, nephews, nonsense. Okay, yeah, because she was talking to Cook. No, she's talking to Julian at the time. I always call him Cook.
Okay, like, number two. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're all conspiring against me.
That's never too late.
Doing. Hold on. Let me finish it. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're all conspiring against me. That's what you're doing. Look at me. Look at my hands and my hair. I haven't been dressed for I don't know how long. Work, work, work. And for what? So I can work some more. Look at me. I'm a mess. It's true. You are a mess.
Great.
That would be Never Too Late. And your brother, Adam Raymer Brown, played my husband.
Yes. He was really good in that.
Oh, my goodness.
He was very, very funny.
Yes.
Okay, this one is the easiest one of all.
Okay.
If you don't know this one, just go home now.
Okay.
He loves old things. You know, antiques, old-fashioned music, dead actors, old things.
That would be the Hepburn Girls.
Yes.
And that is the second feature film that just wrapped filming last year.
That's
We're
right.
still editing.
It's in post-production.
It's in post-production.
Coming soon to a screen near you.
Yep.
Well, I think we're ready to wrap up another podcast. Thank you, Candy, for being with us tonight.
Yay.
Do you have any final thoughts, words?
No, just thank you, ladies, for having me here. I really enjoyed this, and I really enjoyed all my experiences getting to work with you. You are very impressive people, and you do wonderful work.
Thank you.
And you're lovely, and you do impressive work, and you're wonderful.
Thank you, and we love you.
And we love you.
All right, well, this is Ashley.
This is Rachel.
Saying goodnight.
And good luck. That's what we did last time.